Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour for July 11, 2019. And tonight an interesting topic, the sargassum with G, algae, has invaded the Mayan Riviera region of southeastern Mexico. And this in from a listener. But they have a tremendous amount of algae so that the beautiful beaches, people are simply not going there. So the end result is that tourists are being bused to various other locations to have, for events and other tourist type activity. But the main reason people go there, of course, is the Cancun beaches. Just a little history here. When Cancun did not even exist yet, and back in the early 1970s, I happened to be there. I was living in Mexico at the time, Mexico City, and traveled down to the Tulum area with some friends. And the if you go between the northern strip of the coast, what is now the coastline, the Mayan Riviera, and then travel south to Tulum, along the main highway today, if you look off to the east side, it's mainly overgrown, but you can still see pieces of it. There's a road that was built with seashells. And what they had done at the time, this is early 1970s, this was the first road between Cozumel and down to Tulum, or Puerto Mujeres, I think it was, is the town, the port town up on the western, on the eastern coast of Mexico. But anyway, that was kind of an adventure because the road had just opened the day that we were there. So we traveled down this road, the very first tourists to go to Tulum. And of course, at that time, Tulum was just the ruins and a little village inland a ways that was occupied by the Lacandon Indians, who were, they did not speak Spanish. They were very little people. They were the size of, I would say, big birds in terms of structure, the stature. The women's arms were little, they were probably no more than 3.5 feet tall. There's some pictures of me. I should probably post them someday with me and my backpack and walking through the jungle down there with the beautiful Caribbean beach. But ever since, at that time, there was no hotels. Cancun did not exist. There was a hotel, an old wooden hotel, at the port city up at the northern end of what is now the Mayan Riviera. And then they basically dug pits there, and they created that entire peninsula now where Cancun is. None of that even existed before. And so tremendous amount of effort to bring in all of those hotels. Tremendous amount of international illegal money went into there. And, of course, hotels, international hotels, etc. But be that as it may, just a little story, there was no food down there. There was nothing to eat. There was no stores of any kind. So daily, one of us would have to swim out to the reef. It's about, I don't know if it's a mile offshore or whatever. It's that barrier reef that runs that whole coastline. We'd have to swim out there and dive for conch shells dive for fish, come back, and then eat that with coconuts. So I was very fit in those days, as one might imagine. I remember coming back with a net bag full of maybe 3 or 4 or 5 conch shells and sitting down on the beach and getting the conch out and then fixing a supper with coconut meat and conch. So very healthy diet. Anyway, getting back to the sargassum algae that's blooming right now, covering the beaches. And so they trying to get the Mexican Navy in there to do something, and the government will not respond. But at any rate, they say tourism is down maybe by, 10% or some number because of this, because, of course, the Mayan Riviera, Quintana Roo is the state down there. It was a region, actually a wilderness region when I was there. I believe it's now been made officially a state of Mexico or department. And then, of course, Yucatan is just adjacent to that, to the north and to the west. And by the way, that was my first visit when I was down there to Chichen Itza and Uxmal and Tulum and all of those amazing cities down there. And of course, I went back many, many times after that. But right now, they're having this bloom of sargassum algae, and it's causing quite a problem. They say it'll probably continue through July. Okay, on to the next topic, severe weather. Now, this is something that's been affecting everybody. And in fact, I was on the Power Hour show yesterday. You might want to listen to that. I was on the John Moore show in the morning, my weekly appearance there. And then first hour in John Moore show. And then the second hour of the Power Hour yesterday with host Daniel Brigman. And somebody called in and asked about the severe weather situation that's around the planet. So that's a topic I plan to cover tonight. And here's what's been going on. Starting in around June 20th of this year, just not even a month ago, we had an electrical alignment with Jupiter, and that's the traditional Jupiter winds that I've talked about for, a decade or more, term I created, coined the Jupiter winds. And it was not too severe this year. And of course, it depends on many factors. The reality is that the solar system capacitor is very weak. It was weakened tremendously by Hale-Bopp, basically creating that planet from a large comet. It's still in, Hale-Bopp has left the solar system back in early 2000s, but it drained that solar capacitor. It gave us a very weak solar minimum for the next number of years, and then we had a very, very weak solar maximum, and now we're heading into what appears to be another solar minimum that we just, our scientists are debating whether we're coming out of that right now at this moment. But the sun has been very much reduced in energy, and the reason is because Hale-Bopp took a lot of energy. It's like a baby being born. It took a lot of energy out of the solar system. Planets don't form simply by, coalescing clouds of dust. It doesn't happen. And nobody's been able to model that. They've had to always make assumptions, like initial assumptions, like something had to create an impulse or something to get this process going. But planets don't form simply by themselves, just like everything else in the universe. If something happens, it takes energy. It takes energy to do it. It takes a process to do it. And so, at any rate, Hale-Bopp, in forming that planet that's now moving out of the solar system, will be back in another 2,200 years if you're around to see it. But the solar system capacitor was severely drained. So we have not been seeing the cross-solar system electrical discharges as strong as they were in the past. Back in the Hale-Bopp days, we had typhoons and cyclones in the South Pacific with 350-mile-an-hour winds. You don't see that anymore. You see winds of 100 and 140, 150 miles an hour, not the big ones like back in the Hale-Bopp days. So at any rate, but the weather that's going on right now is due to an electrical alignment with Saturn. Now, why is Saturn very significant? Because if Earth connects electrically with Saturn, Saturn is much farther out and drains the solar capacitor much farther out, much closer to the source, which is beyond the orbit of Pluto. And so the other thing that happened was the new moon passing. And that's when you look at my weather book, that's one of the other trigger factors, trigger mechanisms that will kick off severe weather on planet Earth. So the new moon passing was just a number of days ago. So when all of this severe weather started, there was some hurricanes forming in the west of Mexico, moving out into the Pacific, and they formed and lasted for a day or two, and then they kind of fizzled out. But that's because right in that period, we connected with Saturn electrically and the new moon passing. So all of those factors contributing, and so that's subsiding right now. So a lot of the severe weather, rain, things like that. Now the rain, why does connecting with Saturn affect that? Well, it's due to the winds and due to the fact that we are in the middle of summer. So those winds blowing off the Pacific Ocean brings in a lot of moisture, or in off of the Gulf brings a lot of moisture and up into the middle states. So that's where that severe weather came from. And but hundreds and hundreds of storms forming around the Earth's equator. And once again, due to electrical alignment, Earth and Saturn just also following the Jupiter encounter, electrical connection. And so Earth's electrical signature was much augmented from its normal electrical signature. In other words, the distance, the span of the Earth's electrical discharge, which is always there, was augmented when we interacted with Jupiter. Then just a number of days later, it interacts with Saturn. So that's possibly one of the factors that helped us have a bigger interaction with Saturn, and this is not always the case. When Earth comes, this configuration is one of the possible configurations, but it's fairly rare, where you interact with Jupiter first and then interact with Saturn. So it was a perfect setup, kind of a 1-2 punch, but then as the electrical connection with Saturn occurred, the new moon, which was between Earth and the Sun, moved out of the way. The solar wind comes pounding in, compresses Earth's magnetic field, and that compression drives all the way down to the troposphere where our Earth weather forms. And at that point, the discharges, here's what actually drives the weather systems. It's electrical discharges from Earth's ionosphere down to the surface of the Earth. And so that's the connection between an electrical discharge connection with Saturn and the new moon passing. As that new moon, which is between us and the Sun, moves out of the way, the new moon had been basically blocking the solar wind because it's forming a comet. It's outside of our magnetosphere. It's out in free outer space. It's forming a comet. And when it moves to the side, then all of a sudden Earth, the solar wind comes crashing in, compresses our magnetic field, and that compression goes down into the ionosphere and then thusly creates discharges within our atmosphere that drive the big storms. So that's the sequence of events, and I doubt, in fact, I can guarantee you, you're not going to hear that on the evening news meteorological show. Just a quick comment here. I'll be coming back to this idea of cross-solar system electrical discharges in a minute. But Mueller, oh my goodness, these people, what a clown circus Washington, D.C. is. What has it become? Supposed to testify this coming week in front of Congress. My guess is they're going to have him back out at the last minute, because they don't want him going in there. And it's really, it's like if you get into, let's say, a street fight. There's probably no clear winner. It's not like anybody is a winner. Both sides are loser, but both sides claim they're the winner. You know, this is one of those things where there's not going to be anybody that's going to win. There's nothing going to be gained except more of the complete insanity that it was involved in this whole issue. I mean, the country has to move on. There's a whole lot more things going on than trying to question Mueller. And if there were a real investigation, Mueller is one of the key suspects in the whole collusion with Russia issue. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that. But what I predicted was that he's being fully prepped for this. If he does go in front of Congress, it'll be a three-ring circus with Democrats trying to get him to say that there was collusion and obstruction and everything else in the world. And the Republicans are going to try and find out why he did not do a real investigation of the real collusion, which was the paid dossier. And you can listen to 10 other radio shows and listen to all of that. But my comment is that he will be fully prepped. If he does go into Congress, he will be fully prepped with canned answers. And I call it the Sally Yates form of congressional hearing. When Sally Yates was in front of Congress, they would ask her a question and expect an answer. And she'd go, well, you know, since I've been in office, I've really worked hard to have honesty and clarity and transparency for my, you know, and she'd go on and on with just diatribe, nothing. She would say nothing, and they'd go, well, wait, that's not my question. You're wasting the time. And she'd go, yes, I understand, but I just want to make it clear that honesty and clarity and transparency are the full extent of my, and I want to make it clear that, and she would just ramble on and on about nothing for hours. So that's the Sally Yates method of response. And I suspect that Robert Mueller is not the brightest bulb on the tree. And I'm not going to go into any more of that. But if he appears, it's going to be a three-ring circus, and it'll be, like I say, a street fight in which there are no clear winners, but everybody will claim they're the winners. Something along the same lines, and I'm not going to dwell on this. I talked quite a bit about this yesterday on the Power Hour show, and that is NASA's coming up celebration. And I'm amazed at the level of production they are going through to blow this up to be the biggest thing on the planet. I think I told you on this show a week ago or so, I was invited to be on Russian TV to do commentary on the American moon landing. And I declined because literally it does nothing for me. I mean, it doesn't bolster me. It doesn't make me a better person. It doesn't, you know, it's just, but the real issue here is that very simply in a scientific sense, and this is posted on my webpage, this is a scientific claim without any third-party independent verification. It's the only alleged verification comes from NASA itself. But anyway, the thing that's really strange is they have been able to wipe clean all of YouTube and Facebook and the internet and Wikipedia and completely twist the story in favor of the NASA party line, which makes it really, really more than suspect from what it was before. But anyway, the simple scientific statement is that this is an unverified scientific claim. In science, it's not up to a popular vote. It's not who screams the loudest. It's not who spends the most money on production and PR. It's not about who you know in Congress. It's not about anything. It's about scientific data. Let's take another NASA claim, a Big Bang. There was nobody around at the Big Bang. All you have is secondary and tertiary data that really can be interpreted in 10 different ways. So if you're interpreting data for your pet theory, and you're the only game in town, the only game that's allowed in town, then, you know, you can pretty much say whatever you want. As I said before, there's, you know, this whole initial idea of a Big Bang and then evolution of the planets and stars and galaxies, etc. And then all of a sudden you have planets, and then you have monkeys walking around. Then people. Hey, what could be wrong with that? Well, I mean, what's the problem? The problem is there's so much missing in there that there is absolutely no evidence of any kind. Well, what's the other answer? Well, maybe it's okay to say that the human race has not progressed enough to know all of the details. But as I've said before, in detail, evolution does not explain what we see in the world, in the universe. It simply doesn't explain it. Just this random, and everything is randomly, and all of a sudden you got people walking around building telescopes and going into outer space and having political opinions. You know, none of this makes any sense in terms of pure evolution. So something else bigger, much more profound is going on. But the atheist science that's being pounded down your throat hands you evolution on a silver platter. No, a gold platter. No, a platinum platter, and expects you to eat it hook, line, and sinker. So anyway, all I've recommended is that you go out to the sporting goods store. Try and get there first so you can get the highest hip boots you can, the kind that come all the way up to the neck. And because of all you're going to have to wade through. Apparently, I didn't realize that NASA was going to this extent. In fact, I'd like to know what the NASA budget has been creating new footage, creating completely new, I don't know what you'd call it, content. As part of this, so-called celebration. But they're supposedly going to have 250 major events, including Times Square, the Washington, D.C. Mall, just on and on and on. And so, yeah, you're not going to be able to breathe, walk, or go to the bathroom without seeing something from NASA in the next 2 weeks. And as I said on the Power Hour, that's the only thing they've done in the last 50 years worth note. And that's questionable, you know. But the point is that what they want is funding to go to Mars. And why is that? Because anybody currently working for NASA, even if they started yesterday as a young engineer, will be retired before they ever have to get to Mars. So they can all collect their money, get their pensions. They'll all be playing golf in Arizona before anybody figures out that they can't go to Mars. Anyway, enough of that. Just a quick comment on the wing generator. Now, lots going on in the background, too much to even discuss on the air. But I've gotten a lot of requests from people, and I've had to turn them down in the past because they have smaller farms or ranches or a house out in the country, and they don't have the big power requirements. The smallest wing generator available is a 10 kilowatt, and that produces a lot of power. I mean, you have to have welders and, you know, heavy equipment, lathes, metal lathes, and heavy-duty equipment to use the kind of power that comes out of the 10 kilowatt. And that's the baby. That's the little one. So an average guy with a house out in the country that just does average things, the 10 kilowatt is way, way too big. So anyway, what I'm doing, the other issue is with the 10, the 25, and the 50 kilowatt and above. You really need a crew to go out and set it up and install it and get everything running properly. And so there's a lot of expense. The tower is much more expensive. All of the supporting equipment is more expensive. And so anyway, what I've decided to do, and this is just, we'll try it on an experimental basis, but to go and do a 5, a 3, and a 2 kilowatt model. So these are much smaller. And, you know, you might say, well, you can get these on the market from China. Okay, well, you can get the multi-blade little spinning things. They look like a toy, but they really don't work. And so anyway, what I would do is come in with a product that actually works and in that size range. And then the idea is that you as a person out there can, we can just ship it to you, you can set it up, plug it in, and use the proper precautions. And when you get to the electrical part, then you hire an electrician locally and you set it up, and you know, it'd be a much easier installation. So if you're interested and you were thinking before that you were interested in a wing generator, but the 10 kilowatt is much too big for what your needs are, then what I would suggest is do this. Look at your electric bill, and here's kind of the breakdown. For a 5 kilowatt system, look at your electric bill for the month. If you're using around 1,800 kilowatt hours per month, then that would be a 5 kilowatt wing generator would be good for you. If you're using around 1,000 kilowatt hours per month, then a 3 kilowatt wing generator would be appropriate. And if you're using around 700 kilowatt hours per month, then the 2 kilowatt wing generator would probably do very well to support what you need. So look at your electric bill. That's kind of the key. Look at the electric bill. And then also look at the cost per unit of electricity. And I talked to some people that were interested in this, and their cost for electricity wasn't that high, but they said the issue was not the cost so much as the independence, the ability to be independent of the power company in case the electric grid went out. And especially out in the farm, you're going to be the first to go and the last one to be repaired if there's a serious grid outage. And so once again, I'll just repeat these numbers. If your electric bill for a month has around 1,800 kilowatt hours of usage, then the 5 kilowatt wing generator would be probably sufficient. If you're using around 1,000 kilowatt hours per month, then the 3 kilowatt system would be good. If you're using around 700 kilowatt hours per month, then the 2 kilowatt wing generator would be pretty good for your needs. And then also, of course, these would come with battery. And I'm interested in doing off-grid. There are people that build on-grid systems. But if the whole goal is that if the power goes down, you're going to be running your house on this, then you need a battery backup. You need a battery pack. And so the completely independent of the grid. And then I would also recommend like a small maybe generator, which you can hand start or electric start, and charge your batteries with that also. So you have like kind of a dual system. If there's a day when the wind's not blowing or a couple days, then you use your generator and get a propane generator. This is the cleanest form of energy. Get a propane electric generator. They're usually called tri-fuel. So you can put gasoline, propane, or natural gas. But the beauty of having a propane tank is that you can easily get a 250-gallon propane tank, have it hooked up to the system, and now you've got something that's really, really reliable. And if you wanted to go without the generator, that's fine too. It's just that this is what I personally do with the wing generator, which is appropriate for the size of unit that I have. Okay, and then with a propane generator, what I have is a 4,000-watt propane generator. And you have to understand how these work. You have a 4,000-watt generator, and there's two 120 plugs there. And it's a split phase 240. In other words, you can get 2,000 watts out of one of the electric plugs, and then you can get 2,000 watts out of the other electric plug. But when you're running propane, there are propane generators on the market, tri-fuel, that will produce the same amount of power as when using gasoline or if you're using natural gas. So anyway, the idea is that get a generator that will produce the same amount of energy from your generator when you're using propane and natural gas as when you are using gasoline. If not, a 4,000 watt generator then will be down to maybe 3,500 watts, and split that between two, it'd be 750 watts on each of the 120 outlet plugs. And so, et cetera. So you have to choose a generator that's appropriate for the size house that you have. Anyway, just to give you an idea, the average household, these are some fun facts. The average American household, this is used standard when you see calculations, you see some solar installation or something like that. And they say, oh, this will run so many millions of homes or something, some baloney. But anyway, this is what they use for an average, that the average American household, this is in suburbia, this is running air conditioning, your electric fan on your gas, on your natural gas furnace, etc. But average, in the United States, the average household uses 1.3 kilowatts of energy on an ongoing basis, 24/7. So here's what you do. You take 1.3 kilowatts, you multiply it by 1 hour, so that's 1 kilowatt hour. That's a unit of energy. So when you get your power bill, that's what it's measuring. And so then you take 1.3, this is the average household again, 1.3 kilowatt hours per hour, and then you multiply that by 24. And you get, let me get my calculator here, 1.3 times 24 is 31.2 kilowatt hours per day. And you multiply that times 30 days in a month, and you come out with 936. So the average American household uses, on average, about 936 kilowatt hours per month of energy. And then you're charged for that, and the typical rate is 10 cents per kilowatt hour. So in that case, your electric bill would be $95 per month, plus other fees, etc. But your energy usage would come out to about $95. That's at 10 cents per kilowatt hour. Okay, so those are kind of round numbers. So if you're paying $100 a month for an electric bill, and say you live out in the country, okay, now let's average this over a year. So that's $1,200 a year for electricity. If you could buy an electrical system, like a wind generator, that costs you, let's say $4,000, in 3 years, you would pay for that system. And then you would be getting your electricity after that for free. So that's kind of the cost justification. You have to pay some money up front. It's kind of like when I sell water filters. Okay, some people buy bottled water, and they buy a bottle of water, and it's like $1.50, let's say, for one of those 20-liter plastic bottles of water, so a 5-gallon clear container of water with the little spigot on top, and say for $1.50. Okay, well, you know, how much water can you filter from the tap if you have to buy a water filter that costs $200? And it lasts you how many years? And you're using, let's say, 5 of those containers per week. So your cost per week would be $7.50 for water, plus the trip, the gas to go to the store and bring it back, and hauling water and all of that, which is a big pain. But then you'd have $7.50 per week if you use 5 per week. Most people use a lot more. Times 52 weeks per year, your cost per year for that bottle is $390, twice what it would cost you for a filter that's going to last you for 2 years without replacing filters. So the filter is an upfront cost of $200, free shipping, okay. But, you know, you don't have to haul that water around in those jugs and bring it up to the kitchen and put it in the little stand. And no, it's much easier. And then in case of an emergency, you have a water filter. You can take any water source, pour it through there, and you got water. And it's if you go on vacation, you can take the water filter with you. And then you go to Cancun, where all the sargassum algae is. You can put the water in from the hotel. And I've done that. I travel with a water filter on purpose, because then I know that the water I'm drinking is safe. Okay, so anyway, it's the same concept with the wing generator. Imagine that your $100 a month electric bill would go away in 3 years if you put in that, you know, $4,000 investment at this point. And so that's kind of the goal, getting back to the electric part. Okay, so what would cover a average household? The 3-kilowatt wing generator would cover an average household. That includes air conditioning, doing the laundry, everything like that. So that's a pretty inexpensive investment, so that in a couple of years you get free energy from then on. And if the power goes out, hey, lucky you. You can just go, okay, I'm independent. I switch over to the wing generator, the battery pack, and we're running. And that's why I say also it's a good idea to get a fuel generator. How much does that cost? We're talking under $300 for the generator. Then you call up the propane company. You have them deliver a propane tank. There's a cost to that. And have it filled up. Okay, but for a modest price, you have a really, really solid system. And if you don't need that electricity when the wind doesn't blow for a day or so, then just go with the wing system and then conserve your energy. But if you're like me, I might have a radio show to do and the wind's not blowing for the last 2 days, I have energy to do whatever I want, to run my tools, etc. Okay, so let's look at the current offering of wing generators that are 10 kilowatts is the smallest one. And that's why I'm going down to the 5-kilowatt, the 3-kilowatt, and the 2-kilowatt offerings, is to cover those people out in the country. They can install these small ones themselves. Now let's look at a 10-kilowatt generator. What's that going to do for a person? Well, that's for a person with a farm or ranch where they're using 4 times the national average of electricity. You got to be doing welding and machines and charging. That's enough to charge a single car charging station. But let's go up to a 25 kilowatt. Now, all of a sudden, you're using, get this, you're using 10 times the national average of electricity. You're to be able to supply that with a 25 kilowatt wing generator. Let's go up to the 50 kilowatt wing generator. Then you're using 50 times the energy of an average household. That's a lot of energy. I mean, you got to be doing something serious. You have to have a ranch with, say, 200 cattle that you're milking every day with electric milking machines, or maybe charging 4 or 5 electric vehicles with electric car charging stations, which I also market and connect into the system. So for a 50 kilowatt or a 25 kilowatt or a 10 kilowatt wing generator, you got to be using some serious electricity. And that's why I'm offering these smaller models. The other thing about the 10, 25, and 50 kilowatt models is we have to send a team out to install them. And there's not a lot of ground preparation. There's not a lot of digging holes and pouring big amounts of cement. No, none of that. But you still need our team to go out there. That's an expense to go out to your site, set it all up. And whereas the 5, the 3, and the 2 kilowatts, you can set up yourself with the help of an electrician, a licensed electrician, in which, of course, you can have an electrician out there in a couple hours. He's going to have things connected up for you, and you're good to go. This is off grid, by the way. If you want to connect to the grid, frankly, for these smaller systems, I do not recommend it. I would recommend having an off system. And if you have, for example, a utility building, then just run off the wing generator and have a switch set up. So if the power goes off in your house, you can switch over, switch out. You have to switch out the grid power completely, so you're not sending power out onto the grid. And this is all part of the setup, but you could switch your house in and then all of a sudden have complete power for the entire setup there out in the country and have backup power and for a really reasonable price. That's for the people that really don't use much electricity. That means you have a house out in the country. You might have some tools that you're using, just average household tools. You know, a 2, 3, or 5 kilowatt wing generator would be just fine. So this may sound like an advertisement, but I bet you everybody that's listening knows somebody that would like to have off-grid capability. Now, just a caveat here, if you live in some kind of organized area like a city or a town or a township, sometimes you have zoning issues and you cannot have, most cities in suburbia will have like what they call the 35-foot rule. You cannot have something above 35 feet on your yard. And so this is not something you're going to mount on top of your house. You need a region around your house that's clear for good wind, no trees around it. You need like some people live on a kind of a domed area where there's a hill and you have good wind and no trees that'll block the wind or cause eddy currents. So that's one of the issues with wind is you have to get the wind generator to a location where you don't have a lot of variability in the wind, that it's nice and steady, etc. But if you have that, let me just quickly also compare this to solar and three other cheap wind generators you get from China. First of all, yeah, don't buy anything that, like, you have to make sure that people are not selling stuff that was made in China and that they're putting their label on it, selling it here or something like that. But let's compare it. The most common, what I would call enemy of the wing generator is, in fact, this is true of anything, of my water filters, your worst enemy is a cheap imitation. So let's take a look at solar panels. And some guy would say, well, I can get 3 kilowatts of solar panel for, you know, under $1,000. Well, here's the problem. They only work a couple hours of the day. Your battery pack to use solar so that you're going to use it 24/7, 24 hours a day. Now, say you could get a 3 kilowatt solar panel array. Okay, well, let's just run some quick numbers here. On average, and this is the industry average, this is not my numbers, this is the industry average, solar panels work on average for what they call 4 solar hours per day. That means in a given day, you would get 4 hours of energy at maximum capacity. So, say a 3 kilowatt solar panel array would produce 3 kilowatts for 4 hours per day. Okay. And at $2 per watt, that comes out to about $6,000. Already, you're way over the price of the wing generator. But that's not the end of the story. What do you do to get the equivalent amount of energy as the wing generator? So we're comparing this to the 3-kilowatt wing generator. And, okay, so now back to the solar panels. That'll provide you with 12 kilowatt hours per day of energy. On average, if the sun's not shining or if it's cloudy, you're going to get a lot less. Okay, so and this is one of the issues that the wing generator works day and night, all hours of the day, and when it's windy. And there's a lot more wind hours per day than there are solar hours. So that's one of the issues here. That's why a long, long time ago I decided that wind energy was the only solution to curing our energy dilemma. And by the way, you hear these tremendous numbers in the news, like $4 to $10 trillion of solar panels and three-blade wind turbines to cure our energy problem to go green. It's insane. You would have to cover the entire state of California with wind turbines to even make a dent into the amount of electricity we use. That's why I invented the wing generator, because it's very efficient. One large wing generator can replace 125 wind turbines or 600,000 solar panels, the large, like 100 megawatt size wing generators. Okay, but back to your household size here. Okay, what we're doing here is we're looking at a 3 kilowatt solar panel. And how many solar panels would that be? That would be about a dozen solar panels. So you see solar panels up on somebody's roof. A dozen of them would bring out, this is around 250 watts each, would bring around 300 kilowatts of energy when the sun is shining. Okay, so if you look at that 3 kilowatt solar panel array, it's going to run for 4 hours a day on average. That gives you 12 kilowatt hours per day of energy, whereas the 3 kilowatt wing generator, which costs a lot less than $6,000, would be producing 36 kilowatt hours per day, three times the amount of energy from the wing generator. And if the wind is blowing, if it's raining, if it's cloudy, it's nighttime, the wing generator is running. The solar panels only work for the time when the sun is out. Okay, so, but you need 36 kilowatt hours per day in your house running. This is your average household, 1.3 kilowatts of energy on an ongoing basis. Okay, so how do you get that out of solar panels? Okay, so now this solar array, what you're going to need is three times that. So your initial array here of 3 kilowatts is going to cost you, at $2 a watt, it's going to cost you around $6,000. But it's a third of what you need. So multiply that times three, you get $18,000. That's just for the solar panels. Now you got to go buy the batteries. This is the other issue. The wing generator does not use as many batteries because it runs 24 hours a day, or many more hours per day than the solar panels. So now you go out and buy the batteries, and let's buy the cheapest batteries on the market that give good power. These would be gel batteries, or they could be liquid acid batteries. And they're going to run around $300 for a 200 amp hour battery, if you're familiar with these numbers. So you would have to buy 15 of these batteries for your solar array to get you through a single day. Now, if you had more than a day without sun, say there was cloudy and rainy for a few days, you'd need 30 batteries. And that would be a typical standard array of 30 batteries, also because you don't want to be discharging these batteries every day completely. So for a set of 15 batteries, which would be your absolute minimum, that would be $4,500. But you'd want at least 30 batteries, and that would run you around $9,000. Okay, so now you've got $18,000 and $9,000. Add those together, you're up to $27,000. This is what I'm telling you, because if I said, okay, I've got a 3 kilowatt wing generator, the guy at the solar panel place would go, well, you can buy my 3 kilowatt solar panel for a mere $6,000 installed. The problem is, it's not going to produce the same amount of energy. To get the same amount of energy out of solar panels and provide you with energy all day long and all night long, what you're going to have to do is pay around $27,000, which is a good five times what the wing generator is going to cost with the few batteries you're going to need for the wing generator. And so the whole idea is that when I designed this stuff, I know all of these numbers. I'm very familiar. I'm a physicist. I'm familiar with electronic distribution. I'm familiar with the amount of usage, etc. And this goes for the big wing generators also. when you install, say, a big wing generator for a commercial application, the the end result is that here's a study that was just done for the state of New York. It was a study that said it was going to cost them $4 trillion to put in all alternative energy, but the battery pack that they would need to cover this so that they'd have 24/7 electricity would be about four times that. But that's, of course, the power the people trying to pawn off solar panels or three-blade wind turbines on the state of New York didn't happen to mention that fun fact. So that's why the wing generator is much more efficient at generating energy from the wind, and therefore you do not need the battery capacity. In fact, I have the engineering set up so that if you basically overbuild with wing generators, you have very little battery capacity requirement. And so the idea that we're going to pave the American Southwest deserts with solar panels is absurd. The other issue is that solar panels fade out over a 10-year period. They lose 50% of their production. The wing generators are designed to last 100 years. They, remember, you know, when you see those water vanes, they're out in the, every old farm had one. Some of them still do. They still sell those. They're very reliable. They're extremely inefficient, but they use them to pump water for the cattle out in the field, etc. Those things are, there's some out there that have been out there 100 years. They're still working, and that's the idea with the wing generator, is that they should be there for a very long period of time generating electricity. Very simple and very efficient and extremely low cost when you compare it to solar or any other type of energy source. So let me get back to the original point here, is that I've gotten so many requests for people that are out in the rural areas. They don't have an issue with zoning. They're not going to have a problem putting this up. The zoning council is not going to come out and say, you got to take it down or something. But so I'm going to the 5, the 3, and the 2 kilowatt models, so that people can set these up themselves. They set them up and then get a licensed electrician to plug them in to do the final wiring and everything. And then that's it. So that's a twist. That's a change from my original plans. But it's a market that's necessary. And it's like my water filters. That's another good example. Or the water from the air machines in my product line. They go from 70 liters per day up to 20,000 liters per day. So it's a complete product line. So the same with the wing generators now. So if you're interested in, you thought, oh, the wing generators are too big for your farm or ranch or, house out in the country, then write again to the email address. It's on my webpage. Just go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. There's an email address pretty near the top there, a little discussion about the wing generator. And send in and say, just put in the title wing generator and say, I might be a good candidate for the 5, the 3, or the 2 kilowatt wing generators. And then we'll respond to those. And I like that. Because the people that are installing the bigger wing generators, the 10 kilowatt, 25, and 50s, would be like pretty serious operations. They're very commercial oriented, and they have big, big electric bills. We're talking electric bills, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month electric bill. And that's the candidate for the larger wing generators, for the farm and ranch type of models. But if you're just a home out there, the average usage, just like a house in town, except you live out in the country, then the 5, the 3, or the 2 kilowatt models might be right for you. Okay, well, anyway, this is where I want to spend my time in the future, solving water issues and solving energy issues for all different size of users. It's really difficult, I'll be honest with you, it's really difficult to get a word in edgewise with the politicians running around, jumping up and down, talking about installing 30 million solar panels in Florida, or, you know, offshore wind off of New York with three-blade wind turbines that are already proven that they don't work. And, you know, just absolutely incredible insanity, because everybody wants to make a political statement about being green or being, you know, first in line with the, you know, all of that. It's all a bunch of baloney. And sitting in the background is General Electric and Siemens, the most corrupt companies on earth, and thank goodness they're both failing. I just cannot wait for the day when General Electric goes belly up. And same with Siemens, same with other companies, too numerous to mention, but those are the big ones. Just massive corruption in the alternative energy industry, selling products that simply don't work, that they know do not work, and are trying to push this through these green politicians who think they're going to make a name for themselves. You know, it's only going to cost you $4 trillion, more money than ever has been spent in the history of the country, some estimates up to $70, $80 trillion, more money that's ever been spent in the history of the United States or the world, and that's to convert to something that's going to be obsolete in 10 years. So go think about that one. Put that in your green pipe and smoke it. Once again, if you're interested in these smaller wing generators, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. And remember also my water filters, the JMCC GF water filters, water filter systems, and whole house systems. There's going to be some new offerings also coming down the road with the whole house water filters that we're working on right now. And that'll be coming up in the next week or so. So keep an eye out there, bringing down the pricing down considerably on whole house systems. And the whole house systems and the all of my filter systems work the same across the entire board. They remove the same contaminants and toxins while leaving the minerals go through. So anyway, I'm a big believer in water filters. A lot more happening in the background there as far as promotion. So if you're a user of my water filters, tell some people, and that's one of the things that helps this operation keep going. So thank you for the people that have ordered, and thank you also. Word of mouth is the best method of advertisement. So this is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.